Poorly Read.
Hello, welcome to this very special episode of Poorly Read.
How special is it, Tom?
It's super duper special.
Yeah, today, guys, we've got a very special treat. We are doing what can only be described as a not-so-commentary of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, the movie.
The movie.
Ooh. And we've got a very special guest with us today.
Who I'm sure you all know and love.
Yes, Mr. Daniel Radcliffe is here.
Oh, hi.
Only joking.
Sorry, no, I don't react at all. That's my thing.
No, we wouldn't have him here.
No, he's dead. No, with us today is our prodigal host, Mr. Daniel Noonan.
Good evening.
Yes, he decided to join us for this very special. We're saying special. This could be the worst episode we've done so far.
It could be. We don't know.
But maybe that's what could make it special, right?
I thought the special was just in reference to me being special.
You and your various learning difficulties. Yes, yeah, so we are going to be watching the film as we're recording this, but as we cannot guarantee that we're going to be able to fill two and a half hours with amazing comedy content, we are going to do sort of a talk along with all the best bits. So you might only end up getting a 20-minute podcast at the end of this. But hey, you should be grateful for what you're given. No, I don't mean that. We want you to subscribe to us. Please don't.
I just love if the final edit of this, you just put the ending music right after what you just said.
So guys, that's been this week's episode of Poorly Read. Thank you for listening. Yeah, so without further ado, should we press play, or has anyone got any important / anti-Semitic things they want to say?
Have we got anything to say about the version of the movie we're watching? Like, we're watching the, as far as we know, the theatrical cut of the film, so this doesn't include any of the extended version.
I would assume that people would think we're watching the theatrical cut. I think if we were watching the extended one, then we should say we're watching the extended one because...
All right. I mean, I've got a lot of anti-Semitic stuff to say, but it's probably not the time or place.
It's okay. We'll save that for our Patreon episode.
Just one additional note is this. So this is directed by Chris Columbus.
Ugh, yeah.
And for anyone who doesn't know, he directed Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes, Mrs. Euvigenia Doubtfire.
And wrote The Goonies, I think.
Did he?
Yeah,
didn't direct it. Did he do some good stuff?
Yeah, he wrote that.
What are you saying about Mrs. Doubtfire?
Do you know what? It's one of those films that is great and then
I wasn't expecting a serious response.
Oh, sorry. Well, you looked at me with your serious... Look, his emotion peels one off, okay? No, it's one of those films that you need to revisit and reevaluate, I think. Because it is great, but also it's fucking terrible.
It's a treasured family classic, but through the lens of the 21st century, it's pretty awful.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the things we do to get custody of our kids. Like, commit fraud and identity fraud. And
oh, God, yeah.
That whole film is just a minefield. Rewatch it.
Yeah, do it.
I definitely will.
Maybe just stay tuned. Yeah. If there exists Mrs. Doubtfire the book, which
that'd be a dope book, I bet.
Yeah,
I bet it's like a serious book as well. I bet it's not a comedy. I bet
probably
someone dies
not.
In it.
Oh yeah, it's a bit like American Psycho.
Yeah.
Like wearing people's faces for real, and not just the latex plastic ones. It's like a Wall Street mogul as well.
Should we just watch Mrs. Doubtfire?
Should we? All right, fuck this. Guys, we're going to scrap every Harry Potter episode we've done so far. Let's just talk about every scene of Mrs. Doubtfire.
It's a strictly Mrs. Doubtfire podcast now.
Let's not limit ourselves. Robin Williams films only.
Yeah, okay.
Or maybe just like films where a guy dresses as a woman. So Mrs. Doubtfire, Tootsie.
Some Like It Hot.
Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
that's at least 6 years of episodes, right? Right? Right, guys? Yeah? Right? Yeah.
All right, and we're off. Warner Brothers logo.
Yeah, before the logo became more nice and like stylized with what, like, you know, the mood of the film was about to represent.
None of that stylized shit, yeah. Now we're in Privet Drive.
Yeah, so a lovely hour just flown past. We see Privet Drive at night time. Okay, so Dumbledore gets out his put outer and
oh, that's what it is.
I
thought it was his EpiPen.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Does he use the put outer in the book?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
We got some cat morphing going on here.
Oh, cat morphing time. Look at that shadow work.
That's McGonagall.
Right, that's we're watching it on 1.5 speed and it does look quite funny.
Why did Dumbledore need a machine to get out all the lights on the street?
So they're not seen by the neighbourhood, I'm guessing?
Why don't they just use a spell?
Yeah, I mean, don't ask me.
And also, like, the street is pretty well lit still, if I do say so myself.
Well, with the arrival of this fucking oaf, it is. Yeah. Hagrid's just arrived on a...
Yeah, he's got, like, a Jinx of Hazard, like, horn on his plane.
Yeah.
He's calling everyone horse.
Hagrid, why are you wearing a Confederate flag? Ah, oh, well, you know. Things change over Bristol.
Yeah, there's McGonagall's warning. I've watched them all day. They're the worst kinds of muggles.
Yeah, so we don't get to meet the Dursleys before Harry in the film, which I think is kind of like... I don't know. I quite enjoyed the introduction of the Dursleys first in the book, so I kind of wish they did have that in the movie.
Yeah, I suppose. Just knowing that this film is like 2.5 hours long makes me reluctant to wish for anything extra.
I guess so. I mean... Oh, there he is, the little letter. Good luck, Harry. I'll see you in 11 years, if you make it.
Yeah.
Now, was little whinging in the book as well? Because as if anyone doesn't already know about me, I am not a huge Harry Potter fan, so I don't tend to pay attention to the finer details. I have read the first book. It's been a while. Little whinging didn't pop up in my memory as being where they lived. Am I wrong?
Yeah, is the briefest answer to your question. Yes, it is in the book.
Cool. Moving on then. So we're in the Dursley household now.
Yeah, quite a stereotypical sort of like suburban household, I think. Actually, it looks quite like wartimey, if I do say so myself, I think anyway.
Yeah.
There's a certain like, I don't know, rationy charm about it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You sort of get that vibe, and you get that the real old-timely vibe at Hogwarts as well. It is almost like the whole book has been written for an era about sort of 50 years previous to when it's actually set.
Do you know, you're actually so right. Yeah, everything has that kind of... I think it's because there's a certain like charm about the lack of technology from that kind of era.
Yeah,
I think she sort of runs with that very much through the books. That's the only way I can sort of imagine it. So I think it sort of adds to the whole sort of like the coziness and how sort of like cut off the rest of it is from the real world. So it all sort of echoes that vibe.
And why like magic is necessary in so many ways, because we've not quite reached the level of technology we've currently got.
Yeah, I don't think it would be as like impressive.
Dudley's just fallen in the snake tank.
And that's not a euphemism.
Wait, which version of this film are we watching? And the snakes escaped.
Again.
Guys, the cover says Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Pond. Oh, God.
Okay, why are there so many children?
How unconcerned is Vernon that his son was in the snake
tank? So Dudley, the glass just disappeared on the snake tank. Dudley fell in, snake escaped. Glass reappeared and Dudley was trapped inside. And his father was just like, oh, I see.
So we've got an owl approaching. By the way, right, there are so many owls in this film. And there is no way that neighbourhood is going, you know, getting all those deliveries from all those hours for such a long time without getting covered in shit.
Right?
Like,
that's so true.
Absolutely covered in owl feces. And yet we get all these cutaways to the exteriors of the Privet Drive household and it's fucking gleaming, and there's not a drop of owl turd to be seen.
I mean, maybe magic and owls don't shit in flight.
Possibly.
That sounds like the motto for like a foreign magic school. Oh god.
That's where Ron's brother's training in Bulgaria. That's like the motto on his shirt when he comes back.
It doesn't translate well.
And it's written in English, like, oh, it just sounded fancy when we said it.
There's a lot of idioms involved that don't really translate.
Yes, why is your school called Titwang?
Look, I'm not going to go into the ins and outs of Finnish, okay? Like, it's a very idiomatic language. R.I.P.D. Richard Griffiths, by the way, guy who plays Vernon Dursley.
Yeah, he's well dead.
Yeah.
Okay, look at all those fucking owls. And you're right. Not a drop of feces.
Okay, so here comes the rumbling earthquake because all the letters explode through the fireplace.
All right, classic moment. Pick one up off the floor, Harry. Off the floor, there's loads of them.
He's just grasping
at air. To
be fair,
he does get one, so...
I mean, he does.
I mean, he really spent a good 10 seconds trying to grab one, though. With the sound off, this is a far more violent scene than with the music.
It is. And also, the letters coming through the postbox just burst through the wooden like plank that Mr. Dursley had nailed there. They're coming through with some force.
So now we're at the shack and the rock. The shack and the rock.
I mean, say what you will about like the delivery of the lines and the writing. Like, the production design in this film is really good.
That is true. I mean, you can tell that this was made for more than a fiver, you know? Ugh, here we go. Hagrid shows up. I will say, I find Robbie Coltrane Hagrid a lot more bearable than Book Hagrid.
Ah, that's interesting.
Like, because he actually does a really good performance, so I can sort of like, I can tolerate him a bit better.
I can't not see him as Robbie Coltrane now. Like, reading the books.
Like, in the way that I can't see Snape as not Alan Rickman.
Yeah, I think that's a sign of good casting then, really.
Yeah.
If you sort of,
definitely,
you know, then picture them as that.
Same for Vernon Dursley as well, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I said this before because I saw the first two films before I read any of the books. All the characters who were pre-existing look like that to me anyway. Ass cake.
This is the cake that Hagrid's made for Harry's birthday. It looks fucking rotten.
If I was Harry, I literally would dropped it on the floor and stamped on it. And it's been like, I think you should go now.
It reminds me of that birthday cake that Mr. Burns makes for Homer in The Simpsons, if anyone remembers that.
I think I do.
It's just like, it's probably got fingernails in it and shit.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
There we go. You're a wizard, Harry.
There it is.
We just had it. I gotta say, the film's progressing pretty fucking quickly.
Yeah, I mean,
at the moment,
yeah,
like,
to be
we're
fair.
Almost. How far are we in? 10 minutes. We've just had the "You're a wizard, Harry."
To be fair, they could have just started the film at this bit, and it would have been fine. Them on the rock, Hagrid showing up. You're a wizard, Harry. What? And then just first date at Hogwarts. Would have been like, okay, then I guess.
I mean, it seems like that's kind of what they're aiming for.
So, there's a tail now. Pigtail.
Yeah, Hagrid just gave Dudley a little pigtail.
On his behind, not on his hair.
Yeah, it didn't just...
Giving him cornrows.
No, it gave my son an ethnic hairdo. No!
Oh god, like Petunia's, all her racism suddenly comes flooding out. Yeah. So we're in London.
Where is this in London, actually?
This is a good question. I was trying to figure this out. I reckon it might be somewhere around Piccadilly. There's a few little arcades.
Okay.
Do people listening in to this know that we live in London?
They do now.
I guess they would just... Oh, no, we have spoke about London a few times.
Have we?
I basically said how I always forget there's places outside of London.
Oh, yeah.
And Tom's like, yes, I'm from one. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yes, Brixton. A power unto itself.
Oh, look, he's wearing the turban in the film when he meets him in the Leaky Cauldron.
Oh, is he not in the book?
No, we have a whole discussion about that.
Oh, do we? Yeah. I can't remember, guys.
Do you want to pause and talk about that, or is that something we can move past?
I mean, I feel like we've said all we've got to say.
Okay.
Yeah. You can't even remember.
I would say the Leaky Cauldron looks, even though I've seen it a few times in these films, it looks completely different to how I always imagine it. Like, it's a lot bigger than what I always imagine it as.
Yeah, I've imagined it very pokey. There was no mention, or at least in this film, there's no mention of Hagrid's tattoo of the London Underground.
That's Dumbledore's.
Is it Dumbledore's? Yeah. Right, sorry. Okay. Is there mention of that in any of the future?
No, no. It's literally only mentioned in that one sentence in the first
That
book.
One sentence in the first book.
Right.
I mean, it would have been good if when they travelled to here, Hagrid was like, oh, look, Dumbledore sent me a picture of his scar so we could get around.
Yeah. And then he's swiping through different pictures that Dumbledore sent him. He's like, oh, don't look at that one.
Like... Oh, Dumbledore didn't shave on that day. The hole is partially obscured. Okay.
We've got a little Chekhov's gun of the Nimbus 2000 there. Which...
What's a Chekhov's gun?
Oh, like foreshadowing of... You know,
I didn't know that.
Coming back in later on, and we
had our first sort of like shot of the amazing Diagon Alley,
yes,
which is really spiffy actually, because the world in Universal Orlando, which I talk about often on this podcast because it's my favorite place in the whole world, it looks so like, seeing it now again, it looks so spot on in comparison, which is really, really impressive. I believe this goblin they're talking to in Gringotts is Warwick Davis as well, isn't he?
Oh, that's cool.
I think it might be, yeah. I got to say, it does look like the goblins are wearing rubber face masks.
It's probably one of the weaker design choices of the film.
It looks an awful lot like a small person wearing a costume.
I wonder if they made this nowadays, they say, like, you know, this year, say they would just use CGI.
Quite possibly. I mean, unless it's specified in the book that... Goblins are just, in fact, small humans wearing rubber face masks. I don't remember that from the books.
So this is Griphook, isn't it?
I think
yes.
So
they've just been taken down to Harry's vault in a little minecart by a goblin. And that goblin is definitely Warwick Davis.
Yeah. Yeah, oh. I can't imagine. They couldn't have used him for all the goblins. But I know they used him for a load of them.
Well, he's Flitwick as well, isn't he?
Yeah. Which is kind of prejudice in a way, isn't it?
It's like there aren't any other short actors.
Yeah.
I bet Warwick Davis
is. You're already here. You might as well play the other 15 short people in this movie. But we're not going to pay you anymore because you should be lucky to have a fucking job. Like, oh, God, okay.
By the way, one of my favourite casting choices in this film is coming up. Another RIPD. It's John Hurt, who plays Ollivander.
Yeah.
And that I... Like, this man is a treasure. He's one of my favourite actors.
Yeah.
And he was such a... It was such a good choice to cast him in this role.
Do you know what I really love is that all these sort of... Every actor in this film who's actually an actor and not a child who just looks like J.K. Rowling's imagination, they... None of them phone it in. Like,
true.
All of them. Which I think is a very British actor thing to do. I feel like if this was an American film... There'd be a slight few like American actors that they would like cast for their fame that would be like do a bit of like a Bruce Willis. It's like, hey, yeah, man. So, yeah, the wand chooses the boy or whatever the line is. Okay, lunch.
I mean, like, Bruce Willis isn't even phoning in. He's fucking texting it in. Like, he's just, yeah. That man has stopped giving a shit about 25 years ago.
But yeah, like, you get the sense that, like, this little bit that John Hurt had that he probably wrote, like, a whole little, like, you know, like, a bio for, and, you know, he showed up ready to work, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So now Harry's still trying out the wands. Yeah. I
Do
think
you feel
he's
that,
been...
Harry? Do you feel that with that big piece of wood in your hand? But I haven't got a wand, I know.
Close your eyes, Harry.
Give it a little shake and see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know which Blu-ray we're watching, but I... let's not stop. We've got this far.
Do you know what I have a question about? Right, so Ollivander has just said that the one that Harry has, the brother of that wand, is the one that gave him that scar. And Voldemort's wand in like future films is like this really awesome like bone-shaped wand and stuff. And I'm wondering what that wand looked like in its original form when he got it from Ollivander's. Because it obviously did not look like that, you know. Like, Voldemort must have, like, carved that into the shape.
Yeah, there must have come a point where Voldemort thought, I don't feel like my wand is on brand.
Yeah.
We had to get some marketing people in to, like, redesign his look. I'm thinking, how attached to the nose are you?
Yeah.
So now we're flashing back. We're seeing a little bit
So... we just seen a flashback of Voldemort killing Harry's mum. Not his dad, but just his mum. This is really quite an important fuck up, because in this, she dies in front of Harry in the film, which she doesn't in the book. Because if it was like how it was in the film, Harry would have been able to see the Thestrals pulling the carriages from Chamber of Secrets, and he didn't.
Because we can't hear the audio so much, we're not able to comment very frequently on the acting capabilities here, but like, the way that Daniel Radcliffe, he just doesn't react.
Yeah, but that can't be right, could it, Hagrid? And it's like, Jesus Christ, you know what they should have done, right? And I always think this about kids in films.
Yeah.
Film the film, right? And then get adult voice actors to redub all of the child's dialogue.
Well, so little, like, baby-faced 11-year-old Daniel Radcliffe is talking like this.
No, so you get someone like... you know, what's her name? Nancy Cartwright, who can do, like, a child's voice.
Okay, yeah.
So she can redub it, and it sounds like an emotive child's voice instead of, like, a fucking guy who's never seen anything ever.
That's maybe a stay tuned. That's a new gift and YouTube channel, potentially.
Should we just redub all redub scenes?
Get actual voice actors to do it, or just do it ourselves?
Ourselves, of course. I mean, you're almost a voice actor, right?
Yeah.
How so?
You did a course and everything.
Oh, I did do a course.
Yeah.
That's true.
Was more in, like, advert voice.
Well, I'm sure that you could get Harry to sell a washing machine.
Can I just... he's met the Weasleys, and he's just pushed his trolley through platform 9 3/4. Is anyone as bugged about the fact that it's 9 3/4 and not 9.5? Or at least if the film was trying to portray a platform that was accurately in the position that 9 3/4 was, it wouldn't have placed it directly in the middle of 9 and 10? Because he seems to just... He's really going to platform 9.5. And it seems like they just missed a really,
like,
obvious...
platform 9A.
Yes!
But I guess
she wants to make it quirky and weird and off-center.
Yeah. Okay, so Harry's just got on the train, and he ends up in a cabin with Mr. Ronald Weasley. And good old trolley lady comes by. It's like, anything from the trolley?
If that is her real name.
I don't know, her name's probably Agnes, or, I don't know, what's another old-timey name?
Colin.
Adolf. Yeah, so good old Adolf and her trolley comes along, and Harry takes everything on the fucking trolley, like a greedy cunt. But I mean, hey, if you've got that much coin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they open up their suites, and then along comes Miss Hermione Granger. Ugh, even this early on, Emma Watson is so fucking off-putting. I'm sorry, just everything about her is so, like...
But I think she's playing Hermione as she's written, though.
Yeah, I think that's the problem.
Yeah, well, that's not Emma Watson being off-putting, that's the character being unlikable.
Nah, I feel like she sort of was like, it's very, like, one note. It's like, oh, Hermione's a bit like this, isn't she? Okay. I mean, she's 11, what else is she gonna do? But still, it's like, she dubbed them with voice actors.
On that note, though, do you think that Ron is portrayed how you... read him in the book?
I think he's the most accurate one for me.
See, for me, when I watched these films, Ron was the one that I just couldn't stand to watch.
I think he's the most natural, though, in the first
films. Oh, really?
Yeah. Because everything he does is a bit like this, isn't it? And he's
natural.
Bloody hell. And like, yeah, but I feel like that's what Ron would do.
I don't know. I had Ron as a sort of despondent, downcast kind of guy.
I feel like you're projecting yourself onto him.
Oh, sick burn.
Because, you know, he's in the shadow of all his brothers, and he's a bit shy.
Yeah, but I feel like that's why Ron sort of captures, because I feel like when you are in the shadow, you're sort of trying even harder to get noticed.
Sometimes, but I don't think Ron does. I feel like
he does with the amount of confidence he has.
But see, this is the thing. That's how Rupert Grint plays him, but I didn't get that from the books at all.
No, I didn't either.
Well, then what?
Right, so Dumbledore is giving his lovely speech in the main hall, and I pine for this Dumbledore so much because he's so perfect in that role in a way that Michael Gambon never was.
Oh, man, I think Michael Gambon's a badass.
Oh, you so would. That's it, I'm quitting this. No, Richard Harris was just... Oh, just fucking Emma Watson, sorry. She's all nervous because she's about to get sorted. Yeah, I just think that Richard Harris had that sort of majesty and like tranquility, but sense of power that Dumbledore in the books has.
He has the old frail part down for sure.
By the way, these kids are getting fucking lice. Okay,
yeah,
like, you're all sharing this one sorting hat.
Maybe it's got like magic antiseptic or something.
Oh, do you think?
Yeah, I feel like lice is a very Muggle problem.
That's true. Then again, these people use fucking owls, so who's to say? Did we mention that this is the sorting hat?
Oh god, yeah. They're putting the sorting hat on all the... We're so good at podcasting, aren't we, guys? So
why is they do it in alphabetical order? Why is Ron going before Harry?
Yeah,
maybe they're doing it in reverse alphabetical order. No, because she said Susan Bones, didn't she?
Yeah.
Maybe she's just looking at people in front of her.
But she's reading from a scroll.
But maybe the names on the scroll appear as the, like...
Maybe she forgot...
I feel like J.K. Rowling. He's like, yeah, the names on the scroll appear as soon as she looks at them.
J.K. Rowling on Twitter, yeah. Yeah. Just plugging holes left, right and centre.
Yeah, I had to unfollow her eventually.
So Harry's just been picked by the sorting hat.
Yeah, better be Gryffindor. They're all giving his hands a good old shake. Dumbledore's like, oh yes, I have the password for that dorm.
I'll be seeing you later tonight, Harry. Why do we always go to that place?
I don't know. I really don't. I think because we make those kind of like sex jokes anyway, and this book just happens to be populated by kids.
Yeah. Ergo, kid sex. Yeah.
Speaking of which, Ron is now double fisting with the chicken.
Yeah, he's acting like he's never eaten before. For all the like Weasley's poverty, they always have fucking good food. So why is he acting like he's never eaten a day in his life?
Maybe he's just used to eating like that. Maybe he eats like that all the time.
Yeah, maybe his mum just doesn't have the heart to tell him that that's how a fucking caveman would eat.
Yeah.
So now, what's his name? Nick? Necklace?
John Cleese, I think.
Nearly
Headless Nick.
Nearly Headless Nick is now in the dining hall.
Yeah, with some terrible CGI ghosts.
Pretty rotten CGI, yeah.
And to think this was like nominated for Best Visual Effects at the Oscars as well, and none of these effects have aged well.
Woof.
I mean, I don't know how you'd do a ghost better than that.
They're translucent. And yeah, then you hold a seance. Oh, I hear like the staircases of death.
At least they've got like banisters.
That is... Oh, that'd be pretty rad if they didn't, though.
Oh my god.
Fucking hell. Can you imagine?
This place already has so many health and safety nightmares going on. Like, it's getting shut down if they take those banisters off, for sure.
Oh my god. So, fun fact, for anyone who's been to the studio tour, a lot of the paintings are actually paintings of the various crew members involved in the film.
I do like that fact.
Good.
I like stuff like that.
Isn't that supposed to be Dawn French?
No, so Dawn French as the fat lady got brought in from film 3.
Yeah, so yeah, sorry, we're at that. We should really be explaining where we are in the film when we comment on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
So they've been taking up the staircase and...
Again, not a euphemism.
We're never going to get on point this rate. And Gryffindor...
All the kids have been taking up the staircase.
Can you imagine? That's sort of like Eton boys in like 1912 describing like their weekend excitement. Yeah, so I took her up the staircase. You nasty boy, you Wilfred.
And then what did you... What did you do, Wilfred?
Yes, and then I painted her back passage. Oh, God.
And showed her my owl.
Right, Harry was sitting in the window of his dorm at night, looking very wistfully out. And I'm sort of wondering, what is he being like, sort of like, what is he longing for? Because that's a very sort of like, oh, I miss home sort of look he had on his face.
That is a good question.
Yeah, surely he should be sitting there with a big fucking smile on his face, like, oh, no more abuse.
I think he can't sleep. His metabolism's kicked into gear because he's literally had the first proper meal in his lifetime.
Yeah, so true.
And he's just like,
yeah, how did he not die of like refeeding syndrome?
Yeah.
Okay, so just to turn up to their first transfiguration lesson, Professor McGonagall done the impressive leap off the table as a cat, landed as a woman.
Now suddenly we're in potions.
Yeah, and Snape did like the very impressive storm in, right?
Yeah, he did.
With complete disdain in his voice as soon as he opens those doors.
Also, I love how like flicky Snape's hair is in this film.
He's a bit rock and roll, isn't he?
Yeah. Dare I say it, sexy?
You dare not.
You dare not, Gifton. I'm too sexy for my cape. Too sexy for my cape. I teach potions, if you know what I mean. I do my little thing in the classroom.
Please don't sue us, right, Sid Fred?
Said no one ever.
Right, so Snape is giving Harry the little quiz about what do all these things do. Knowing full well that Harry wouldn't have an idea, Hermione has her hand fucking right up in the air, wanting to answer everything.
Is this, is such a big point made of Seamus? We're in the bit in the Great Hall now, and Seamus is trying to turn a grape into, oh no, his drink into rum.
Yeah.
Is there such a big deal made about his flagrant alcoholism in the books? Because I feel
when
like it's, there's a
yeah, and the only exactly. Irish character. Yeah.
I feel like there's a real sort of agenda they're trying to push there about Irish people that is not on.
Well, I feel like more than anything, it's another example of how if your spell is not in Latin, it doesn't work.
Yeah, he was just trying to do a little rhyme, a little, you know, witch chanty rhyme, like Ron's thing where he tries to turn Scabbers yellow.
Yeah. Nah.
Which, as we know, are not real spells because they're not in Latin.
Yes.
Neville's got his Remember All that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but I do think that's very pretty.
What, the Remember All?
No, Neville.
Oh, it was like we scripted that.
Oh, right, so now we're outside for their first outside lesson.
Yeah.
With Madame Hooch. And Hooch was the name of a very popular Alcopop back in the day.
God, yeah. I think they still make it.
Do they?
I'm sure I've seen it recently. Write in and let us know if they still make Hooch.
Yeah, Madam Hooch isn't her real name. It's a nickname she had since college.
She spends a lot of time with Seamus. Yeah.
So they've all mounted their brooms. It's very sort of like a bit of like a telegraph of what they do in the books, basically. She's telling them what to do and what not to do. Mm.
And Madame Hooch does actually have yellow eyes in the film as well.
Yeah, which is still a mystery.
Mm.
So my interesting fact that I said in the episode that we did on the book that was featured this moment is that the guy I went to college with played Neville's body double in this scene. And he got paid 2,000 British pounds for that.
So now Harry and Draco are getting on their broomsticks. Draco's taken the little, what's it called again?
Remember all.
I will say the way Draco just sort of side saddles his broom.
That was pretty swish. It was pretty cool. I thought the exact same. Okay, I will give it to Emma Watson. Every now and again, she does say a line in a very like pleasing way. Like, I don't know. She gets like the don't give me that look, Tom. She does the right sort of like intonation that I like appreciate. Something that Harry never sort of masters.
Do you mean Daniel Radcliffe?
I mean, they're one and the same, right?
As far as I'm aware, yeah. I watched Swiss Army Man recently.
Is that any good?
It's all right. It's a bit saccharine. Thankfully, Daniel Radcliffe plays a dead body, so it's not a big stretch for his acting abilities.
I will
say,
I have a lot of respect for Daniel Radcliffe. You know, I think he's not a natural actor, but I appreciate that he's taken the time to learn how to be a better actor. And I like that he's actually forged a real career for himself. I have a lot of respect for him. So Daniel, please come on this podcast.
Daniel, I share the same first name as you. That is all. Oh, and enough of this walking and talking that they do in this film. There's way too much of this.
That's just what you did in school, right?
But this is a like AAA Hollywood feature film, yeah. And you're wasting minutes of people's time with kids like walking and talking in corridors. And there's more than one scene guilty of this. And I just feel like it's lazy filmmaking.
But what would you rather them do?
I just think that you find a way to film it interestingly, or
have them all in toilet cubicles and just talking over the tops, right?
Over the tops, yeah. Yeah, well, like,
hey, bloody hell, Harry. Right, all of a sudden, the trio have become friends, and I'm sure that didn't happen this early on in the book.
Well, that happens after the troll, doesn't it? After
yeah,
Halloween.
The troll hasn't happened yet, but they all seem to be together and in harmony, which isn't how it is in the book.
Where are they? What's happening now? So, I don't remember this bit at all.
Yeah. They're about to find Fluffy for the first time.
Okay, this all happens a lot sooner than it does in the book, then, for sure.
Yeah. So, what's his name? Felch's cat. I honestly couldn't remember his name for a second. The cat is sort of is Filch.
Oh, God, that's gross.
That's why he's the caretaker. He takes care of it. And they've just sort of snuck into... the staircase has led them up into an abandoned kind of hallway. Filch's cat was in the way, and they've locked themselves
and
behind a wooden door.
And so they were running away from Filch's cat.
I think it's because the cat made them flinch and they made a noise so as not to be seen. They moved into the next room and then they suddenly
Because the light, like the lantern on the wall, like lit up.
That's it.
As well. So I think Filch then knew.
But they haven't done anything wrong.
No, but I think they were in a corridor that they shouldn't have been in.
But the
Dumbledore said to avoid the third floor corridor, so they knew they were in the third floor corridor.
The staircase swung them in front of it, and they walked to the top of the stairs and walked through the door it spat them out.
Yeah, that's just like a cheeky staircase, isn't it?
Well, then they could... Why do they... It doesn't make any
classic
fucking
Hermione
sense.
Line. She says, we need to be careful because we'll end up getting killed, or worse... expelled.
She needs to sort out her priorities.
She needs to sort out her priorities.
Well, naturally delivered there, Rupert.
I think it was.
It wasn't. It was delivered like an 11-year-old trying to act.
That's why they should dub them all like they did in Bugsy Malone when they sang.
So now we've got the most English-sounding Scottish person explaining to Harry how to play Quidditch.
I think he's a real Scottish actor.
He is, but I mean, he's just got an extremely kind of Borders accent.
I bet that's drama school, though.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, they probably said, look, you need to soften this up because we can't just have you doing Lurpak commercials for the rest of your life. I will say, of all the kids acting we've seen so far, he is the best one, though. He's very natural.
Yeah, I always thought this guy was pretty good.
Yeah.
He just touched the snitch, and I suppose you're not supposed to, are you? I'm sure he wore gloves in the book.
So this is a finer detail I wouldn't know, so I'm going to have to defer to Tom on this one.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can only assume that this is not the same snitch. This must be a practice snitch or something.
Yeah, but I don't think, I don't think there's such a thing as a practice snitch, though.
So after Harry's caught
Yeah,
that
I don't
one,
think they can use that one again. Because even when they make snitches, they have to use gloves.
Oh, well, they both just touched it there, so yeah, that's fucked then. That's fucked that one, isn't it? But then how did... They both touched it, and then it flew away from Harry's hand.
Yeah, so that's just an inconsistency.
Yeah.
So now we're back in class, they're learning the infamous Wingardium Leviosa. Oh, sorry, how do you pronounce it?
It's Leviosa.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ron.
So Professor Flitwick in this literally looks like something out of The Dark Crystal. Like, it's quite shocking. Yeah. And he doesn't look like this from film 3 onwards, which is good. They just left the lesson, and then that's when Ron says something shitty about Hermione, and she does the very dramatic, like, barge pass.
So we are now back in... It's Halloween, and we're in the in the Great Hall, rather.
We've paused the screen. Dumbledore's got a very concerned look on his face.
Yeah, an appropriate Dumbledore look, unlike later Dumbledore.
I just think Michael Gambon's got that air about him that, like, I might be an old man, but I will kick your ass.
I think he has that air of arrogance because him and Ray Fiennes both refused to read the books before they did the movies, which I think is like such fucking utter hubris, and I think it shows in their performances. So
it does. Actually, you know
I'll have that with cheese.
Yeah.
A la mode.
You know what? Now you've said that, I think I liked Michael Gambon's performance for the reasons that you were saying you like Rupert Grint's performance.
Really?
Well, they're different because he does play Dumbledore differently to how he comes across in the book.
Yeah.
But I like it in Michael Gambon's Dumbledore. I don't like it in Rupert Grint's Ron.
I remember I liked him in film six. I thought he got it right in that film. But everything up to that, like literally what, like the three movies before that, especially the obscene bit in film four. With a, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire, Harry?
Oh, God.
Yeah. And there's a YouTube thing of literally in the book it says, blah, 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 asked Dumbledore calmly. And then it cuts to that bit in the movie. And it's
brilliant.
Right. So they've just been alerted about the troll in the dungeons. And they're like, oh, fuck, Hermione's in the dungeon. Not in the dungeon. Sorry. The toilet.
That's what wishful we call thinking. The toilets in wizarding school.
So they ran to the bathroom, and lo and behold, troll.
I mean, this does look like, without the sound, it looks like a slapstick comedy scene.
Yeah. Vaudeville piano.
Yeah.
It's not a very good CGI.
It's
troll.
Terrible CGI.
Yeah.
But I mean, we are talking.
I'm sorry, but anything post Jurassic Park has no excuse in my book.
Can I just say? So we just had. Harry get the wand out of the now fallen troll's nose because they stick it up the nostril.
Yeah.
And because we don't have the sound on, I did read the subtitle there that said, ooh, it's troll boogers.
Yeah.
Now, I watched this last night.
Yeah.
And he distinctly says troll bogeys.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's American subtitles.
American subtitles, maybe.
Yeah. Quite possibly.
Is there anything else that's strictly British that they say?
Well, when the Philosopher's Stone comes up, surely it's still going to say philosophers, not sorcerers.
I imagine so, yeah.
I did read this on the IMDb page about some of the discrepancies, and what they did was ADR, which is additional dialogue recording, and they overdub, they kind of loop certain parts of the film so you don't actually, you're not exposed to the movements of the mouth, and then they overdubbed with different words.
I know that I did definitely watch the scene in the library where she finds the Philosopher's Stone in the book, and they have a shot of the book and it actually says Sorcerer's Stone, and she says Sorcerer's Stone as well, but they might have just done that in the in the booth later, because I reckon the mouth movement would have been so, you wouldn't notice it, I guess.
Yeah.
If they just took it out. Okay, so Harry's just...
Are you fucking kidding me?
What?
That could not have been any more obvious that it was a broomstick. It's literally a broomstick wrapped tightly in brown paper in the shape of a broomstick. They unwrap it and Ron goes, it's a broomstick.
Bloody hell, Harry. It's a broom.
So, just to catch everyone up, we're now in the Quidditch match. He's with...
Oliver Wood.
Lerpak, man. From the Quidditch team, they're about to. And he says this line so nonchalantly. He's just I was knocked out for a week. And you're like, that's a big deal.
Knocked out for a week.
Like,
Jesus. Son. That's long term damage.
Yeah. You know.
Also, they're fucking wizards. Why can't they just awaken him?
Exactly. They can fix.
Maybe Dumbledore was like, no, I like the winners. Oh, a whole week, you say, Madame Pomfrey. Okay.
Yes, he made my whole week.
Oh, God. Oliver Wood. I love that she's called Madame Hooch. It's making my day every time I see it.
I love how she's just so unceremoniously just fucking kicks the box with the quaffle in it.
I think it's because she hates this job. Like, she is the PE teacher, basically. So blatantly a lesbian, right?
No comment.
Shit, son. Someone just got knocked through the goal hoop. The goalkeeper got knocked through the goal hoop.
Yeah, that was Oliver Wood.
Shit.
Just got a bludger He just got bludgeoned through the hoop. Again, not a euphemism.
This is... we're still not sure of the source of Gifton's Blu-ray DVD. Not sure what we're watching.
There's hoop bludgeoning going on.
Also, they actually...
Oh, and now Angelica Bell's getting double-teamed.
Oh. Oh, shit, son.
These kids are falling, like, 20 metres out of the sky.
Yeah.
And they're...
Do you think the floor has, like, a magic cushioning charm or something?
I mean, it must do, otherwise there would be deaths.
But then Dumbledore does have to do a spell to, like, rescue Harry when he falls in book three.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they like that aspect of danger, to be honest.
Especially this bit with, Harry... essentially having an epileptic fit on a broomstick.
Who fucking flashed the camera in his eyes?
You have to cut that bit out. I can't offend epileptic people.
Oh, we do much worse than that. There are some bits we do cut because we're like...
Yeah, but they're going in a secret podcast.
Yeah. Okay, right.
A premium podcast.
Looks like he's going to be sick.
And yeah. Harry throws up the golden snitch and receives 150 points.
There we go.
And everyone's happy as Larry.
Yeah, he catches the snitch in his mouth. And then the producers of this first film breathed a huge sigh of relief when that turned out to be actually pretty important.
Yeah.
In book seven.
Yeah.
What's Hagrid talking about? Bought enough of an Irishman, so I was like, met down the path. Oh, Fluffy.
Yeah, again, more anti-Irish.
That's weird,
because
in the book he says he buys it off a Greek chap. Yeah. He's like, oh, that's like cool.
Yeah, because Fluffy the Three-Headed Dog is a Cerberus.
Yeah.
Hagrid says in the book, I bought him off a Greek fella. And so I noticed he says, bought him off a Greek fella, because it's from ancient Greek mythology.
Yeah, I wonder why they changed the film. That's
changed
weird.
It to, I bought it off an Irish fella.
Right, so in this
Again, the anti-Irish agenda in this film.
Oh, you're
so right. They, you know...
Shit, son.
It's... lowest common denominator.
I mean, the director's name is Christopher Columbus, so. All of a sudden, it's Christmas time, and we know that because Harry's got a tree and it's snowing. I said Harry's got a tree then. I meant Hagrid.
And we're seeing Harry and Ron play wizard chess for the first time, as we're about to find out. They call it wizard chess.
Yeah.
Why would you call it wizard chess and not just chess?
Yeah. Why?
It's like we don't call it human chess.
Well, they're still human.
Okay, muggle chess. And we wouldn't know, would we? What's the version of a game that we play and cats also play? Okay, fetch?
I mean, person fetch?
It's manhunting.
Oh, God. Right, so it's Christmas morning and Harry wakes up and for the first time in his life, he's got an erection. I mean presents.
So Harry's just received his invisibility cloak for Christmas and his head's floating about the room.
Which is actually a pretty cool effect, I think.
It is, yeah. I agree.
Like the way it actually looks quite natural when he's flinging the cloak over himself as well. Mm. And it, like, you know...
Definitely.
The way it looks as he's putting the cloak on. It's pretty cool.
So Harry's got on the invisibility cloak and he's gone to the restricted section in the library.
Yeah, the first thing that he does
is
to go to the restricted section.
And that's how you know that something's wrong. It's like he bypasses the girls' like changing room and goes straight to the restricted section.
He's hardly being inconspicuous though, is he?
He's got his fucking lantern.
He's got his hand with a lamp outside the fucking cloak.
Also, fire near books doesn't seem like a good idea.
No.
So he opens up the book and that is really scary, I think.
That's a lot less scary than it was in my head when I read it.
I think it's... Oh, really?
Yeah.
So just to clarify, that's when the face kind of jumps out of the pages.
No, yeah. I was talking about when he whipped his dick out. I think it wasn't as scary because the sound wasn't on. I think if the sound had been on, we would have all jumped in fright.
Maybe, but I don't know. I never imagined a face actually emerging from the pages. It just says the book screamed, and that, to me, was much more terrifying than it being personified by the human face coming out of it.
Oh.
Harry's just escaped once again, pursuing Felch, and he's discovered Snape roughing up Quirrell.
Yes.
Roughing him up.
Yeah.
roughing him up or what?
And also it's another, yeah, because Tom has mentioned this in the past about why didn't, if Snape knew that Krull was up to something bad at that point, which he clearly does, why did he sort of not pursue it further, you know? So Harry just stumbled across the Mirror of Erised.
And he looks straight into the surface of the mirror and he's got three giant penises attached to his
But look at those two. Look at, how old is that actor?
Which one?
The mother.
How we had this discussion. How old is his dad when...
Well, in the books, they died when they were 20 or 21.
Yeah.
My goodness. They aged terribly.
Look, his dad in that is 40-odd.
Yeah, but he could be imagining them as they would be now.
But how would he know? How would he know?
That's the thing. He doesn't, but the mirror does.
Okay.
Because don't forget, the mirror shows Ron what Ron would look like when he was older too.
Well, even so, he would only be in his early 30s, and that's unfortunate.
But I've seen some people in their 30s who look a lot older than they should. That's what happens when you don't wear sunscreen, kids. And she is really ginger, so...
Well, she looks we'll like she looks like she could be in...
Do you think they were like, you know how they used Harry for the Christmas ads? Do you think they used her for like Nivea sunscreen?
Wear sunscreen or you'll die like Harry's mom. But okay, I do like that they kept those actors throughout the entire series. I think that's nice.
They should have started with a younger dude.
I think it's appropriate. I really do.
Well, I guess they just...
Because we don't know, because a film watcher doesn't know any different.
Well, they do if they've read the books.
Yeah, but, you know, making a film for the people who read the book...
I say that, it's not actually said how old they are in the first book. I think that's extended universe stuff that's happened afterwards.
We don't know until we see the gravestones in book 7.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, it's not a big deal. And they don't look so old that you think it's weird they would have had a son Harry's age.
No, but they do look so old that it's inconsistent with the years, with the dates we see on the gravestones in book 7.
Yeah, but
they don't know that yet, yeah, so like, fine.
But I do
fine,
prefer...
Fine.
Okay, guys, Tom just walked out, so...
So now we've got Dumbledore
chatting
explaining to Harry how he's about to... disrobe in front of the mirror. No, he's telling him about the mirror of Erised.
Doesn't do well to dwell on dreams, Harry, and forget to live.
People can't see physical gestures on a podcast.
I think people got from my sliding tone that I was disrobing.
So now we've just got a general sort of mood shot.
I hate these shots in the films. There's like, so many shots of pointless fucking air things.
Yeah, like nothing's happening. Wait, Harry was just walking in the courtyard and it's snowy, and then he lets Hedwig off and she just sort of flies around.
Springtime,
and we get some aerial shots of the school.
Yeah, they run to Hagrid saying, well, we've got to protect the Philosopher's Stone, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, oh, shut up, here's my dragon egg. He's like, oh, shouldn't have told you that.
Right, so Malfoy saw them in Hagrid's hut, which is different to how it is in the book, as most things are. And he's running on Tom McGonagall. Yeah, because...
Malfoy sees them at the window, and they see him running away.
Mm. In the book?
Yeah.
This is terrible, I don't remember this, and it was literally weeks ago.
But then, like a week passes between...
Oh, yeah, there's all the shit in the book and stuff, and he sees the message and stuff, isn't it, from Ron to his brother. Right, so what we don't see... I mean, it's not... what we basically, I don't even think Norbert shows up again in this film, to be honest, from what I can remember.
Do they not get rid of him?
Like, no.
No, because they're already at their detention.
Yeah, so basically, this skips from... In the book, there's this whole bit where they try and get rid of Norbert by trying to give it to Ron's brother, who's a dragonologist or whatever they call it. And then Malfoy catches him, and then McGonagall catches him. And then they get the detention that leads to them being in the Forbidden Forest. In the film, it just cuts from them being... from Malfoy seeing the dragon in Hagrid's
Norbert's
hut.
Gone. Dumbledore sent him off in Romania to live in a colony.
Why did Dumbledore not fire Hagrid on the spot then in the film?
So literally, this dragon just makes one...
My question went unanswered.
Just makes one appearance in this film, and it's just...
It's just so they have an excuse to get to the Forbidden
Forest. Just so they can shoehorn in this detention and get them into the Forbidden Forest so they can see...
They would have been better off
happens.
Just doing the Midnight Duel, and that's how they got caught, and that's why they ended up in the Forbidden Forest.
You could have cut this film by about 15 minutes.
Yeah, they could have done like a 20-minute, like, sitcom length episode, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure they definitely could have figured out a way to cut Norbert out of it completely.
Yeah,
like, I mean, it's not a strong like piece of the plot anyway. It's pretty contrived as a reason to just get them into the forest, but at least there's a little more meat to it in the book.
Yeah, so they're in the forest and Hagrid just puts his finger in some shiny white shit.
It's unicorn blood.
The like Terminator, the melted Terminator version thing.
See, Tom uses that reference and he's never seen the film.
I have not. That's why I articulated it so well.
So Hagrid pairs up two young kids by themselves with a dog and lets them wander off into the forest.
Which is so fucking bizarre, right?
It is.
Like, this whole bit of the book, actually, I thought was proper ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it didn't even need to be. She could have just not even mentioned the Forbidden Forest at the start of the Hogwarts Feast. But the fact she said you're not allowed to go there because it's so dangerous, like, it made it a thing when it didn't need to be.
It is called the Forbidden Forest.
Yeah, they could have just called it the forest.
Yeah.
Also, right, sorry, but that fanged being that we just saw, it's because we know exactly who it is, it's Quirrell, right? It makes no sense that he had a mouth like that.
And why is it hovering like a Dementor?
He does say it moved across the ground in a snake-like fashion in the book. Remember?
Yeah, but why does it do that? It's Quirrell.
I mean, maybe like Voldemort can give him special powers.
To move across the ground in a snake-like fashion. Just walk.
What's your mutant power? Well.
We now return to live commentaries from J.K. Rowling's Twitter feed. I'm just plugging gaps left, right, and centre.
Said Dumbledore. Right, so Firenze appears. The centaur, who in the books is a bit of a supermodel, and in the films looks a bit like, a corn mascot, I feel, you know?
Like Corn the band? Like,
no, I meant like the food.
Oh yeah, it's got that green giant vibe.
Yeah. I mean, it could be both, to be honest.
Oh God. But we don't see any of the other centaurs.
All right, now Harry's figuring some shit out in the common room.
Yeah.
You know who's in the Forbidden Forest. You see, he's weak, living off unicorns. Snape wants the Philosopher's Stone for him so he can bring him back to power.
I just can't get over how put together these 11-year-olds are.
What do you mean?
Well, they're so rational. And like, you know, Hermione just did some sleuthing there to kind of connect the dots and say, oh, who deserves Voldemort most fear? It's Dumbledore, so as long as he's about, then Harry's safe.
Mm.
I'm not figuring that out when I'm 11 years old. There's no way.
No way am I doing half the shit they do. Like, coming to the conclusions that they draw at 11 years old, like, just no way.
But I mean, maybe when you've got nothing else to do at school, you would.
What do you mean nothing else to do? They've got magics to study.
I mean, other than that.
Wait, we just had a, I shouldn't have told you that. What should I not have told them?
About the flute putting Fluffy to sleep.
Yeah, oh,
that's
says
that it. He told a stranger down the pub that. So they just run to McGonagall. McGonagall's like, how do you know about the Philosopher's Stone? And they're like, ah, oh, because of this and that and that.
What really bugs me as well is that when they approach Hagrid in this scene, or two scenes ago, he's playing the John Williams score on the flute.
Is he?
As well.
Oh, what a knob.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's playing a really rudimentary version of it, like...
That's such like a... I feel like that's such like a product of the time. Like, do you know what I mean? You'd never see that in films now, apart from when you do.
I bet Chris Columbus patted himself hard on the back after that one.
He did a lot of things to himself hard after making this film. Oh, we got a classic Snape look then. Glare and a half.
So just to clarify, what did they say to him?
They said...
No one's paying attention.
No, we didn't see what they said. They just had a little interaction with Snape, but it ended up with Snape stalking off like a bat.
It was... And
and then Harry saying, we're going down the trapdoor tonight.
That is so like Wizard Disco. We're going down the trapdoor tonight. Yeah, man, turn up that wireless.
Oh, Hermione just made Neville go all stiff.
And he...
Oh, it's not the first time she's done that. But the first time she had to use a wand.
The first time she knew about it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Is it getting hot in here? So they're in under the invisibility cloak and they do Alohomora and then get through to where Fluffy's being kept. And somehow they all fit under the cloak. I never quite understood that.
Yeah, it makes sense, especially as time goes on as well.
But they don't as time goes on.
But it takes a while for their feet to show. I think it's like book 5.
I guess maybe. But it does show. In later books. It does say, "Oh, I remember when all three of us used to be able to fit under this."
Yeah, I feel like even from the off, you wouldn't. But it's not an invisibility cloak. It's like an invisibility like fucking
cravat.
So they don't even have to play the fucking flute to get the doctor sleep because the harp is just there.
Completely moot point.
Because I think in the book the harp had stopped playing, right? It had stopped playing, whereas here it's still playing.
Yes.
Oh, that is pretty scary. So the dog is woken and drawled on.
And that is
Dumbledore.
Gross.
It really is. Oh god. Just Ron's got a huge white wad on his shoulder. Yeah.
He's taking a load there.
Right, so this is the bit that I said that I thought was better in the movies than it is in the book, and I still agree with that.
All right, so
do you mean this entire sequence?
I mean the entire film.
Yeah. No. Oh, those vines look awful, though. They look like they're made out of rubber.
I mean, probably because they are.
Well, yeah.
No, but I like the fact that Hermione uses such a dope spell to get rid of it. Look how chill she is. She's so composed.
Yeah, they sink down through it.
That's a pretty cool move.
Yeah, but like the Lumos Salem spell she uses is so rad, I think.
Well, let's all sit here in silence and wait for it then.
There is something about this scene with when they get stuck in the roots right through to the end of the chess match. It feels very like they're contrived, the whole sequence.
I mean, it's like I said in the episode where we covered this, these chapters in the book. It's like they're like fun little escape room puzzles.
Exactly.
That have been made by the most powerful wizards in the world to protect something very powerful from a Dark Lord who wants to rise again.
Do you know what maybe would have been better is if these rooms already existed in this, like, in this fashion, and they were used to, like, hide various things throughout, like, you know, Hogwarts history that weren't that weren't anything important, and Dumbledore was like, I'm just going to put it there for now. So maybe that's why they're quite easy to overcome. So these rooms were used for something that, in a way that the challenges were meant to be overcome or something.
And it was just a temporary measure.
Yeah, so maybe just because that was like the deepest part of the castle that he knew about at the time, maybe. So he was like, yeah, okay, I'll put it there. So all of these charms just like existed already.
That would have been better.
Fucking J.K. Rowling, eh? What are you saying, Scoob?
You having a stroke, Scoob? I'm going to say 5 words and you've got to repeat them.
Do you draw smell? A clock. Go on.
He's a dog. Shut up, he can draw a clock. So right. Now we're in the chess room.
Yes, we've had the devil's snare vines thing. We've had the flying keys room. Now we're in the chess room. Ron's taking control.
Can I just say what would have been the perfect if these rooms were actually old rooms that were used for like practical owl exams maybe or something in the past. So this is one of the final things that you had to do. So you had to solve the things.
Puzzles that are supposed to be solved.
Yeah, because it all relates to a certain subject, right?
Exactly.
Because they clearly are meant to be solved.
Yeah.
They're puzzles that are meant to be solved, which is not the measures you would put in place to stop a powerful Dark Lord getting to a powerful artifact.
Yeah, no one's stepping away from this and going, you know, like, oh, I've done a real good job there. No, the engineer who did this got fired for sure.
It was the fucking Hogwarts teachers.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I never understood why Ron had to, like, in like air quotes, die in this bit. Like,
yeah.
What?
He doesn't get speared by the thing. He falls off a not too high height. And, like...
It's onto solid marble, though.
Yeah, but he would have been fine.
Well, he gets knocked out in the book as well, doesn't he?
No. He can't move on. He can't leave, like, the board or something. He's like, so you two need to go on ahead of me.
Right.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm absolutely positive.
You've said that before and been wrong, though.
Well, I have the courage of my convictions. No, he definitely doesn't get knocked out because he's not even like on the back of the horse. He's just in the space where the knight would have been.
Yeah, and the queen comes and clotheslines him and knocks him out.
She doesn't knock him out.
Mm.
She doesn't. I promise you, she doesn't.
All right.
We can research
it. I don't
later.
Believe you, and I'm going to read it again. Okay. Hi, Tom from the future here. Just wanted to chime in quickly about Gifton being 100% sure that Ron doesn't get knocked out in the book. Just let me read the passage for you here. He stepped forward and the White Queen pounced. She struck Ron hard around the head with her stone arm and he crashed to the floor. Hermione screamed but stayed on her square. The White Queen dragged Ron to one side. He looked as if he'd been knocked out. There you go. Confirmed. You're full of shit, mate. Anyway, back to the pod. Cheers.
I find out you've like redone the entire five episodes like on your own.
Okay,
Harry's
so
just arrived they in skip, the final
they skip the potion riddle.
Arguably the best bit, I thought. That's the bit I enjoyed the most reading it. I guess it's not very visually interesting, though.
It's not very visually interesting. But and I mean, it's, you know, a puzzle with literally a sheet of clues to help the person trying to get through solve it.
It's all bollocks.
It is all bollocks. We've established that. Let's move on.
It would have been better if it just cut from them going through the trapdoor and those stairs were directly underneath. That would have just made the most sense.
Those steps, what, like through the trapdoor and then bang, Quirrell and Mirror?
Yeah, because the Mirror enchantment was enough, by far, actually.
Yeah.
And it made the most sense because it was not designed to be like defeated. It was just designed to be retrieved by the appropriate person at the right time.
So Quirrell's just taken the head wrap. What's it called?
Turban.
Turban, thank you. Off his head.
The head wrap.
And we've got Voldemort revealed in the mirror to Harry.
I do really like the portrayal of Voldemort later, though, when he gets his body.
Oh, do you? Of course you do.
When he gets his gym body.
I can't stand
not?
It.
Oh, really?
Ray Fiennes is the most unscary, like, flouncy, like, fucking flowery villain you can ever imagine. Even the way he holds his wand is, and I'm saying this as a gay guy, is so fucking limp-wristed and stupid. I'm just like, go, like, it's literally S my D. I just can't do it.
He is a bit, but again, I quite like it.
No, Voldemort, because it's not frightening. Voldemort in the books is quite, like, high-pitched, and he's got a gravitas and a subtlety. He's got, like, a Darth Vader level of, like, intensity, which Ralph Fiennes just doesn't have.
Well, Schindler's List must have really sucked for you. Like, you really must have felt like whoever he was up against for that Oscar really got robbed. Because honestly, I think he's awesome as Voldemort.
I hate him. Everything is so dramatic as well. Everything's like, come, nigga, nigga. It's like, fuck off. Just you're Snake. You can say, come, you know, come. Right, so Harry's just touched Quirrell.
Can you remind me again why his face burns?
Right, so, because Harry is imbued with the protection of his mother's love that runs in his blood, Voldemort touching that, it's like an affront to Voldemort's very, like, constitution. So it makes him break down, which is why when he gets his body back and he's remade with Harry's blood, that no longer has a thing. So in the film, we see Voldemort, like, the apparition of Voldemort appear and then, like, fly off.
Through Harry's chest.
Yeah.
And that's significant because
in the book it doesn't happen. Like, Dumbledore, like, does he appear right as Harry's, like, passing out in the book? Or do we not see that?
Yeah, he hears a voice. And interestingly, the touching causes Harry pain in the book as well. And that's why Harry passes out, because his head's splitting with pain.
Which makes sense.
And so it's like a sacrifice for Harry to run and, like, press his hands against Quirrell, because it's, like, torture for him as well. And that's what causes him to pass out.
Yeah.
Whereas in the film, I guess maybe they just didn't want to see, like, an 11-year-old get tortured like that, maybe.
Yeah, well, not on camera.
Yeah.
Because it didn't. He just looks at his hands and is like, oh, wow, I can cause him pain by touching him. So he runs and puts his hands on his face, and then it melts him, and then Harry's kind of stood there like, fine. And then it's the spirit of Voldemort flying through him that causes him to pass out for some reason.
I sort of wonder if, like, I don't know, it's kind of weird because in the film, knowing what you know, it's almost as if like that bit of soul is trying to reconnect with the one he has in Harry at that moment. That's what, like, even though that's not what they would have been thinking, it's kind of nice how, like, kind of
that, yeah, that I guess fits.
So Harry wakes up in the hospital wing, and guess who's already there? It's Dumbledore.
Like, locking what? The doors behind yeah. him. Yeah.
Well, I've been out for a whole week. A whole week, Harry.
Just like that other Quidditch boy.
Yes. It's okay, I've bandaged you up nicely. yeah, so basically Harry asks Dumbledore all the questions that you would ask. And Dumbledore answers some of them and not others. And that sums that up nicely, I feel.
Yeah, but you know, that's the mystical role model. It's what they do, isn't it, in fantasy.
And this, the way that he delivers this, Richard Harris, exactly how book Dumbledore does. And I feel like this is something that Michael Gambon never manages to sort of like recapture.
No, he definitely makes Dumbledore his own.
Yeah.
But what are you saying, like, he doesn't capture that sort of gentle side of Dumbledore?
Yeah, because everything, Richard Harris, he's been so subtle and, like, just, like, soft and everything, but there's so much behind it, and you can really get that sense of, like, wow, this is Dumbledore.
I don't know. It's definitely a more cocky version, but I still think the sense of awe is there.
In film 6, maybe, but I think not in the quiet moments quite like this.
Fair enough. We missed the alas earwax line.
Oh, guys, what we've based this whole podcast upon. Seriously.
Oh, God, fucking hate the scene we're now at. So we're at the fight, we're at the Great Hall, and they're calling out the house grand total points. And this bullshit that fucking Dumbledore pulls, where he gives them the totals. Yeah. These are fragile children whose, you know, whose entire being is built upon competitiveness and being the best wizard and blah, blah, blah. God, and he completely shatters, you know, he calls out all the totals and he says that Slytherin have won. And then he goes...
Sorry, because we're watching this sped up. Snape's clap then was like ridiculously quick.
It was.
That was excellent.
If I clap faster when I fall, I'll fly away. So, yeah, and they're all getting, you know, and it turns out Neville's 10 points for standing up to his mates got them.
God, such the cup. Bollocks.
And,
like 10 points to Neville for being a prick.
That's what he should say. He should just come.
Can you imagine? 10 points to Neville for being the biggest prick this school has ever seen.
Isn't that right, Neville? You little cuck. Get back in your cage. You cuckold.
No wonder your grandmother hates you. Oh, God.
I hate Dumbledore so much for this bullshit. For you know, just turning things on their head. You know, that's not the mark of a good educator.
So they're all packing their stuff onto the Hogwarts train and Hagrid.
There's a picture of Harry as a 1-year-old with his 40-year-old dad.
It's not weird that you're making it sound as if it's like super weird. It's not.
It's not super weird. It's just not the age his dad is.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, so Harry's just received the photo album from Hagrid as a little present. Which he receives from him at some point during the book.
It's in the hospital wing.
Yeah, on the hospital wing.
And, well, he's waving at Harry. And Harry, or Daniel Radcliffe, kind of reacts with a bit of disdain there, I think. Like, oh, God, that big old oaf is waving at me. And the train pulls away from the platform and the camera pulls up. And that's the end. And we see Hogwarts in the background. And that's the end of the film.
So that brings us to the end of this, like, not so wonderful movie.
No, it's not really,
is
it?
Do you know, I will say that watching it just then, I will say it wasn't as terrible as I remember, but I feel like that's because the sound was off.
The sound was off. It was over 1.5 times as quickly as it otherwise would have been.
Yes.
And we were just kind of chatting shit over a lot of it.
Yeah, so basically everything you would want from a podcast did occur.
Yeah, I feel like if I was to sit and actually watch that film in normal speed and actually properly sit and watch it, I'm not sure I would make it to the end. Well, there we go. End of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, what would we
movie.
Give it out of 10, guys?
5?
Yeah,
I think I concur, actually.
It's really hard because, like, in terms of filmmaking craft, it's actually really well edited and, for the large part, directed and produced.
I disagree with that,
I think... Oh, with the editing?
I disagree with editing and directing. I think that the actual, like, a production and the set design is all on point. I mean, it's all quite amazing. I think the direction is, I think it's so sort of, there's no creative flair, it feels like.
I feel like that's partly to do with the script, though. He's got a very kind of flat script to work with.
I don't buy that because I don't think the script is any different to, say, like the Prisoner of Azkaban script. Yeah, I feel like Cuarón? Yeah, I think it is. What he does with that is remarkable. Because he's like a real director, he's like an auteur, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Chris Columbus is widely regarded as like a hack, you know? So, and he was asked, because every time a film finishes, they ask the director if they wanted to do the next one. So he was asked if he wanted to do Azkaban, and he said no. And so thank God he said no.
Yeah.
Because obviously we wouldn't have got that beautiful film.
I think I stand by what I said. I think that you've got a really difficult job with that first film because you've got to establish an entire world. You've got to do it in such a way that doesn't lose people's attention, and you've got to do it in a timely manner. And yeah. I think that's a huge undertaking. And I think that he is a little bit of a hack in some circles. But I think that film could have come out way worse than it did.
I mean, it could have, but I feel like there's so many things that, if they just had someone with a bit more imagination behind it, could have just been a bit better.
Like a different author.
They should have just put a fucking beret on J.K. Rowling, gave her a clapperboard, and it would have been fucking rad. Or the worst thing we've ever seen, as we've seen in Fantastic Beasts.
Oh God, yeah, we'll get to that. That's
yeah, those have been good episodes. We should totally do those.
I've not seen them, but I've heard they are.
I saw the first one. It was like, tried to watch the second one. I got like 20 minutes in. I was like, this is so bad. So I turned it off.
Yeah,
that's why I make a good podcast episode.
Potentially, I'm going to say 5 out of 10.
Maybe we should go and go to the theatre on the West End and go and watch The Cursed Child and record an episode while we're in the audience.
Should we? Someone does something stupid, like, I don't fucking think so, mate.
Nah, mate.
Anyone else think this actress's portrayal is just a bit stale?
Just run off the stage and grab a one. It's Leviosa. Yeah.
Now, let's just pause and discuss the cinematography in this section for a moment. That would be me, definitely. Because I'm that wanker.
Okay, well, yeah, I didn't really, like, enjoy it, but things are always better when you're watching it with friends, right? Hey, right, guys? Yeah, right?
They've left the room.
Yeah, I will say that, I'm quite looking forward now to watching the second one.
All right, well, I think we've come to the end of the episode there. We all had a distinctly average time, and we hope you did as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're still listening, which we hope you are, we expect you're not, though.
Yeah. If you enjoyed yourself more than I did, there's something wrong with you.
Well, yeah, well, this has been our movie review episode. We hope to do more of these in the future. Dan has been our special guest, and we hope he'll come back again to
absolutely
revel in this movie magic. But yeah, this has been episode 6 of Poorly Read.
Yeah.
Our special episode. But was it special? That's up to you guys to decide. Email in and tell us.
Yeah. Tell us how special it was.
Tell us how special we all are. So share this with your friends, share it with your mum. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at poorlyreadpod. Email us at poorlyread@gmail.com. I've been Gifton.
I've been Tom.
And I've been Dan.
And Hagrid's been Hagrid. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.